the wand, a puff of smoke, and the magic man pulls one out of the hat.
I still can't believe it happened.
Welcome to the Maroos Magic Supercoach Podcast, following round 24, following the full season. All done, all over. Tommy, how are you?
Yeah, good, mate. Good. It's been a bloody long year. And I think I put on Twitter that it's probably one of the more chaos-filled years that I can remember as playing Supercoach. It's definitely been a tough one. There's been a lot of carnage all throughout the year. And it's over now. And good to look back and, you know, see the decisions we made, where we ended up, and debrief it all. So looking forward to it.
Yeah, imagine if we still had, what was it? Was it 24 trades before they went to the 30? But even the 30, imagine that this year.
Yeah, I don't even really remember how we did it. I suppose everyone was a little bit less gung-ho on doing those upgrades. You really needed to let those rookies fatten up, and probably you weren't getting the absolute best 22, which obviously is the goal now. But yeah, I don't know how we did it, and I think we could have all used more trades in the end.
Yeah, we'll go through learnings and stuff like that today. Pretty quick one and casual one more just to sign off. I know a lot of coaches, like you said, it's a long year, and I think it felt a long year because, one, the chaos, the lack of trades, way we're all just limping to the end. The extra bye round made that whole bye period, 4 weeks of no full rounds of footy, feel pretty long, and then the extra round in total made that back end feel long too. But we'll get through this, wrap it up. I know a fair few members, and I didn't realise how many were up there at the pointy end. I've always mentioned we've got, there's about 100 subscribed to the emails of the super coach, and I knew we had a couple up there around the top, but it was good to see so many higher finishes, whether that was top 100, top 1,000. I think it probably cost you a top 100 position, knowing that it felt like there might have been 10 to 15 up there in the top 100.
Yeah, it's really good. Really good to hear that there's, I suppose, some of our advice isn't too bad, and people have had some good years. So, really good. And I suppose it is hard to differentiate yourself between the competition, especially late in the year. But I think that's the fun of it, you know, trying to find those point of differences that can make you climb. And I certainly got a couple of those just after the bye that helped me climb up and kept as a pod. So when they go against you the other way in the final round, you can't complain too much.
Yeah, we'll review your season and our season as a whole. And I think you're spot on. That's why I think it would have felt a drag. I said it felt long, but at least we had good teams, or for the most part had good teams. It would have been a very long season for teams who were trying to chase, because unlike other years where you've had players have a mid-season break, I don't know what there was, probably a Flanders and a Jackson towards the back end of the year. But DPP, last few years, we've had a Bontempelli, an English, a Baz Smith come in available in the forward line. Whereas this year, essentially the top six, who everyone projected the top six forwards to start the year, whether it was a Dunkley, Goulden, Taranto, Cogs, Butters, Rosie, were the top six forwards, and the top two rucks, English, Marshall, or the popular ones, end up being very strong ruck options. So it's very hard for people chasing to come back knowing that those starting squads were so strong. We'll have an early look at next year at the back end of this, but I think next year is going to be a lot more interesting, knowing that none of those forwards, or the top seven or eight forwards, will be available as forwards. They're all going to be mid only. The good rucks are going to be good rucks again, but they're going to be bloody expensive. The difference this year, we had all those forwards and the rucks at a discount, and they all outperformed that. So I feel like next year is going to be a lot more challenging, but a lot more enjoyable to differentiate and start using some skill and strategy. But on that, this season, how did you end up going? I know you're pushing towards the top 100 to finish the year.
Yeah, another good round for me to finish off. So I scored at 2,701. On Sunday morning, I was thinking that was probably going to get me towards the top 100. I was pretty confident. And then there was just some scores, I guess, of those antipods that I had going against me that prevented that. So I actually ended up dropping a rank down to 116. So just missing out on that top 100. I think it was about 30 odd points. And you sort of looked across those players on the Sunday. Sort of Himmelberg obviously was a bit of a pod against me. A few had him. He obviously put up a really big score. Butters went absolutely massive, and I don't own him, and he's pretty highly owned. And there was a few others as well. Mills was the other one probably that probably cost me. So Now, very happy with the year, very happy with that last round, and 116 is certainly nothing to sniff at, so happy to bounce back from last year.
Nah, it's an incredible rank, to be honest. I've always said it's harder. I don't know whether it's a pressure which comes with it, but also disclosing your moves and thinking, providing content, and then also playing as well. But to back up the two top 10 finishes with a near on 100 finish, with the number of, amount of content out there and the amount of good coaches out there, is a bloody good effort. What was I going to say on that? The end of the yeah, there's some big scores. Like there's a, I'm pretty sure there's a 3,000, the weekly winner, the biggest score ever in the history of Supercoach came, and I'm surprised you did drop a rank in that. And my, I finally didn't have a donut when good old cheering on Oshied Mullen got named, meant that I could actually have 22 green dots, and I thought I fared okay. Had Butters as the captain, so scored a 26.31, but dropped about 60 odd points to get me to 289 to finish the season. Obviously wore a donut for the last 3 weeks of that, with, we'll talk about learning soon, but Ridley and Dacos being out for the year, just looking at my ranks, how they went through the year from a, what, 14,000th at round 4, 6,000th at round 5, 1,000, then mid-year came 600, 300, 200, 200, 160, 140, 129, and that's where you can see the insert meme of the, or meme, sorry, of the Simpson pull the heart out. That's where the donut started coming. It went 129, 169, 227, 289. So I think we both had a chance for that top 100 at one point, and obviously showed that the philosophy stack up, and the way we're seeing him is good enough to push that top amount. But I've said to you before as well, we're at a good stage where we had a good rank for our reputation, but didn't have to have that stress, which I know we've had back in the day for that final final week. So a couple of learnings for the season, obviously. Your starting squad, I was trying to dig mine up. Is anywhere on this platform you can see what your starting squad looked like?
No, you can't, and it's really unfortunate. It's hard. I went back through my screenshots. There was about 100 of them, and I'm pretty sure I've landed on the – I've found the one. I'm sure in our chat there's probably one floating about from the one that you've sent me, but it is hard to find and well, a bit of a struggle.
Best pick to start with yours?
It's a bit of a tough one. Like I think Dawson was relatively – he had relatively low ownership to start the year. So, like, getting him in my starting team, I know he was putting big scores on the board early and people needed to bring him in because he was clearly one of the, I think, the number one defender early. I think it was either him or Dacos. He obviously slowed down towards the end of the year, but he was a really good starting pick. Obviously, Setters was a great cash cow that I was fortunate enough that you pointed me in the right direction on him. And then probably like a few of the forwards. Gordon was obviously very highly owned. But looking at my team, there's probably one thing that sort of sticks out is I'm looking at it and there's not a lot of players that I was super, you know, that I look back and like, yeah, that was a great starting pick. And that's probably reflected in my early ranks. You know, I was around the 30K mark for the first 3 weeks and then 20K at round 4. And then I started to climb. So I really had to do some of that aggressive trading to really correct that side. And, you know, most of those players that I brought in over those first couple of rounds ended up staying in my side. So wish I started them. I would have had a fair few more trades on the back end and probably would have been able to come home stronger.
Yeah, I can't dig mine up now, but similar-ish names. Obviously, the failed picks were the injured cherry for me, but sometimes those sliding doors, you cop the hit early and what hurts you in Supercoach is that extra trade you have to use. But that meant that I could see that English was fully fit after his poor injury-interrupted pre-season and did well against a two-headed monster and I could jump on him, whereas I would have probably started with the Sean Darcy type and probably been lagging a little bit with him. So sometimes the crisis does create some opportunity. The big miss, though, and just looking at the total total points for defenders, Nick Dacos is still a top six defender for total points. Obviously, number one total points for the season. Oh, sorry, average points for the season for defenders. You didn't start with him. I didn't start with him. We got scared from the tag. We thought the blueprint was there. McGuinness did the job at him in the preseason and thought, okay, well, everyone's going to see that happen. And then he went off and went mad, and obviously we all jumped on him pretty early before his big price rise in round three, but that was probably my worst move. I started Jordan Ridley over a Dacos, same price point. And just looking at the top six defenders there, Dacos, Dawson, Sicily, Stewart, Ryan and Sinclair, I think if you started the season, you would have picked, probably could have easily picked top six of those, maybe Doherty in there and not had Dacos. Didn't realise how good he was going to be. The midfield's where it got a bit interesting, especially with these injuries which we copped during the year to the big dogs and Laird's poor start, Oliver's injury through the middle period. But the top six top eight midfielders for the year, Bontempelli number one scorer, and I think you got to say that was probably our best pick and a reliable captain option most weeks there as well. Oliver, Petrarca, Laird, Merritt, Libber. What's he gone there for? Sicily, who have I filtered for? Sorry, I must have had my defenders here too. Sorry, 2 seconds. Bont, Oliver, Petrarca, Laird, Merritt, Libber, LDU. So, and Sarong's there as well, actually, and Tom Green. So there's a few emerging young mids coming through the ranks, an LDU, a Sarong, a Tom Green, a Goulden, but he's more the forward status one. Libba's the interesting one that bounced back, and I thought it was going to be McRae, and that was probably my worst starting pick, starting McRae, thinking he was going to get the big bump with Dunkley gone. It was Libba who ended up being, if anyone started with him, he was dominated all year with a 116 average and still was only owned by 12% of the comp to finish it. So his breakout was the one which came out of nowhere, but again, most of the other ones were ones most coaches would have identified to come. Any surprises from you from the midfield or any way you'd play it differently next year?
No massive surprises from those names that popped up in the midfield, but certainly when I look at my team, that's where my starting side fell down. I've only got the Bont and I guess Tom Green, who I started out of that lot. Obviously, Tom Green came out with an injury, but I started a Steele. I started a Kelly, who were obviously, you know, very underwhelming, got injured early and I needed to trade them out. So when I sort of look at my starting team, I had some failed mid prices, Flanders, Bruin, where if I'd gone down a rookie route for those players, I certainly could have put, you know, even if I turned one of them into a more elite mid, didn't take a haircut on Kelly and, you know, started an Oliver who obviously was started the season with a bang.
It's easy to say that. It's easy to say that, but then it's like, well, look what Flanders did the last 6 weeks, and you got him there less than just over $200,000 to start the season. Should have been a lights-out pick if Stewie Dew had his head screwed on. So that's just kind of the sliding doors moments of fantasy. Interesting you did mention Steele, and what used to be the best players in this game, and more so the fantasy game as well, those defensive mids who just get the reliable tackles each week. They might not be the quickest or fittest, but they get contested possessions and tackles, whether it was a Tuke Miller, Patrick Cripps, Callum Mills, Jack Steele. It almost felt like this year those sort of slower, bigger-bodied mids were left behind a bit from these new quick-footed Rosie, Dacos, Zach Butters through the midfield. And I don't know, everyone's talking about next year and first picked and that we're going to get those midfielders very cheap, a Steele, a Tuke and a Mills, because look, last year they were all averaging 120+. Do you think we can go, are you expecting a bounce back from them, or is it more these new age mids we're seeing coming through of an LDU, a Sarong, a Gould and a Tom Green?
I certainly think it's probably the new age mids. When you sort of look at the way, I think Steele, for example, the way he plays the game, and the way the game's probably sped up with the new rules, the stand rules that they've brought in, like it's just gotten quicker. The game's quicker, and if you can't spread, you're going to miss out on touches. And I think if you're not a really good user of the ball, you're probably capped in terms of your ceiling as well a little bit. I think Steele's probably got a little bit of an excuse for the year. He obviously got injured a couple times. His body was probably never right. So I probably won't be too against going back to the well on Steele next year if he performs in the preseason, because I think that those tackle numbers can really help. But I think, looking at the players that are coming up, it's certainly those ones that converse from the stoppage, get involved in chains, and the players like Steele, the players like Mills aren't as capable of that. I think the role is probably the most important thing when it comes to Super Coach. You look at a player like McRae, he gets pushed out. Like, he could go to, you know, any side. Like, if he was playing for West Coast and right at the coal front, the coal face, he'd be averaging 120. Is that the most, I suppose, beneficial role in the team to have someone there that's sort of a bit stagnant, uses the ball really well but doesn't spread? Maybe not in the new modern game. So is he going to get pushed out unless he's traded? So players like that, I think, are the ones that we probably need to avoid. Although at the same time, like, we do have a lot of trades. 36 is a hell of a lot. And if they're coming in under price and can be that stepping stone, or that's the best one you can get to, and they're going to end up as your M8. I still think there's going to be an argument to picking them if the form's right in the preseason, but I think the time of them being those elite players that are just averaging that 125 and are capable of doing that are probably passing by.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. Like, Libba showed that you can still just be a contested player and rack it up that way. Like, we saw the year before, it was a George Hewitt, it was a Patrick Cripps, all these big-bodied mids who get that contested possession. Didn't matter if they didn't spread, they were the best scorers, but they just got left behind. I'm looking at Jack, so I know he had an interrupted season and a few injuries in that, but he had 19 touches the weekend just gone, 11 touches a couple of weeks before then, 22, 23, 24, 14, 21, 19. Like, he's, as you said, less stoppages, less opportunity for him to get the ball, which also means less tackles. And when they do get the ball, they're not getting the value for the points because they're not the good ball user. Whereas someone like a Zach Butters, who I had the captain on the weekend, like, you just look at follow the AFL app and look at their disposals. You just know when Zach Butters is on, and it must be annoying for non-owners, but when he's on an 80 fantasy, he's on 110 Super Coach, because when he gets it, he hits the target. And it's, I think, which is good, the game's gone a lot more towards bang for the buck and disposal efficiency, given that game's so much quicker and there's the ability to do that and go on. So, yeah, I'm going to look next year, and it'll be through the season guide as well, and I love looking back at discounted mids. They've come off, they've scored this before. Can they do it again? We thought it this year with Jack Steele. Yep, he came in cheaper than 2 years ago. Is he going to bounce back? But maybe we've got to adapt with the times and look for the next fleet-footed, quick midfielder, whether it's a Taron Thomas or the LDU or whoever it is. Maybe we have to adapt. Come the ruck department, I think next year this is going to be the really interesting area, because you're going to have yourself... Well, the top two averages by the end was English and Marshall, but they're going to come in bloody expensive. English at 128 average for the season was incredible. What was almost more incredible was the fact he played 22 games, or 23 games even, after barely even getting through the preseason with a couple of soft tissue injuries. And we all got in Darcy Cameron, and I apologise, that's a mistake call I made during the year, saying, well, these rucks are going to miss a week, you're going to want to have a backup, and you never needed him, and he was bad as a forward, old Darcy Cameron. But obviously, that, I think the trade period is going to dictate mainly what we do there, whether we see a Grundy moved, in which case I think he's going to be a very obvious pick, and then his mate Max Gorn could be back to old school set and forget, because, those top two scorers are going to be very, very expensive.
Yeah, it's going to be difficult, but I think it might also be time to go back and just pay up. Like, we were doing that for years with Grundy and Gorn, just given the fact that they were the number one and number two players in the comp. I think Marshall, I'd be more concerned about him regressing just a little bit. I think with English, what you get for him, even if you lose 50, 60K at one point in the season because he puts up a low score, I think that ceiling that he's capable of being an out-and-out captain's choice week in, week out is going to be pretty hard to turn away from. I think when we sort of go through what those lines are going to look like, if you look at the forwards, like all the top scorers, Dunkley, Butters, Goulden, Rosie, Taranto, Cogs, McRae will be a forward, Sheasel, and so that's down to eight. They're all not going to have forward eligibility. So every single person under those top six are averaging under 100. So one, we're not going to be spending up like we probably think we might need to in the forward line, which is going to leave a little bit of cash left over. And we're going to need to get points from somewhere. So I think I'll probably at this stage pick English, just given that, and that's similar to the defensive line as well. Like a lot of those elite defenders are going to push into the midfield. I'm not sure if Dacos, if he will qualify for defence, but Dawson's gone. Doherty might even miss. It's going to be a really difficult year, and it's going to be really, I suppose, it's going to differentiate the teams a lot, which is a great thing. But there's going to be cash to spend, and that's obviously going to have to be put somewhere. And I think going English and paying up, whether it's a Gorn if Grundy leaves, I think that's a really good option. And then looking at maybe even Grundy in the forward.
Yeah, English is a freak. That Caesar was incredible, that 128. And we all knew he could find the footy and use it pretty well. What I didn't realise was his actual hit-out ability. I know he didn't win his fair share of hit-outs. He'd always be under man, but next year he's going to be bigger and stronger once again. But it's more his hit-outs to advantages where yeah, he'd have games where he would score 80, 90 fantasy, but a 130, 140 super coach. And there's going to be days in the next couple of years where he's going to put up big 200-pointers. And as you mentioned, we used to just pay up in the ruck, set and forget, and super coach more so because you don't want to waste a trade if you don't need to use it. So what's the point in starting another premium if they're going to give up? What did they give up this year? The third best ruck was giving up 20 points per week to Tim English. So you're going to want to own them at one point anyway. If you don't go them, how are you going to get that extra cash to get up? So I think you're on the money there. It'll be very interesting trade period where it goes. And then you mentioned before the forwards, how probably won't have access to most of those. So are we going to have to start looking at some key position players? Are we going to have to start looking at, is that where you go really cheap and put your rookies? But it's going to, as I said, teams are going to be a lot more different next year than they were this year. Sam Flanders, I imagine, might be an F1, if he maintains that forward status. We mentioned your starting squad. How about trades? What was your best trade of the year?
I'll probably want to bunch these up because I sort of went through my starting squad and the issues that I had. But in those first two rounds, I traded out Flanders, Bruin, Josh Kelly got injured, Chesser, Sean Darcy and Jack Steele. And I brought in Sheasel, Coniglio, Dacos, Zeeble and English and Callahan. I guess all but one of those was a great sideways trade and really shored up my side and helped me climb the ranks. And it was something that I didn't do the year before. I probably had a little bit too much trust in my team, thinking, oh, the trades might run out. Just with the old philosophy of holding those, seeing how it plays out, make your cash and then do the trade. So really happy that I pulled the trigger and made those corrections early. I guess probably the best trade was certainly on the way home, and I think that was bringing in Libba for round 16. He was just went bang, 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 apart from that game that he was knocked out. Unlucky that he missed the round, but he certainly helped me climb the ranks really aggressively. Massive point of difference. I think jumping on him when the rest of the comp didn't have him certainly, you know, helped put that extra 20, 25 points on the board against the rest of the competition.
Yeah, that I think you're right. The old school mentality was back in your premiums, don't sideways trade premiums. But I think no bigger round to do those trades in round three, particularly when people put their hand up. So I got in the same. They were probably my best trades too. I got rid of a premium in McRae, who ended up not being a premium, two rookies, Radiglia and Chesser, and was able to bring in Dacos, Zeeble and Chandler, who not just generate a heap of cash for all three of them, but also got the scores for Zeeble and Dacos. Getting in Butters round six was a nice move. He was a unique pod, 496K he was in that week, and obviously went on to score really well and became still pretty unique towards the end. And then I've mentioned that before, the best trade was that Zeeble to Ridley in round 12, which gave me the cash to do a Seamus Mitchell up to Jordan Dawson, and made, I think, Zeeble's 568K, Ridley was 428K, and Ridley outscored him before he got injured by plenty and made more cash. So that one really set me up, and that's when you talked about my ranks at the start, and whereas charging towards that top 100, that was on the back of that. What about the flip side? Some really bad trades of the year. Do you make a move which you regret?
Certainly, it was unlucky, but the bringing in took Miller in round six and then trading him out after a 40 certainly hurt the next round. That was probably that was a pretty big killer. And I'm just looking now. I don't think these are actually all that accurate because it's got me trading out Oliver. I brought in Oliver and he was gone 2 weeks later. But I'd almost count that as a good trade, just given the fact that a lot held. And I think that really hampered a lot of other coaches. Steele seen my side 3 times and I don't think any of them were good trades. I didn't trade him in at the good times and I didn't trade him out at the good times. So plenty of things went wrong for my side. But I think probably what came through is that the players that I brought in, Steele probably aside, were all premiums. It was something I probably couldn't do last year, or I was a little bit, I felt hamstrung into trying to be aggressive to maintain that upgrade cadence. I've got a couple of weeks where I did double downs. I didn't do the user boost. And I use that to just make sure the next week I'm going to be bringing in that absolute bona fide star rather than grabbing someone that's underpriced that I was a little bit iffy on. And I think that showed.
Yeah, no, that definitely showed. And I learned that from you as well. So obviously if you didn't get that, your big hit was that Libba concussion that week, whereas you'd be firmly in the top 100. And that's because you were storming home that back end of the year with those best 22 premiums. Obviously you copped a couple early ones, Took Miller as well. I know we joke about it, but you did message me that week saying, look, it was you. Would you go Butters or Took? And I went Butters, but that led to then I think you got Petrarca in, who ended up being a great pick anyway. So who knows what would have happened there. Jack Steele again. So that this year, you mentioned last year when you had to play catch up and you were just settling on whether it was the, I know I wasn't going to mention this again, I've hit you twice in a minute, but your Liam Bakers and these types. Whereas this year, those coaches who took the haircut back end of the year on whether it was a Himmelberg, a Darcy Cameron, a Callum Mills, a Took Miller, they also copped the same thing where you were just giving up points to this top echelon, where this game, Supercoach, unlike fantasy, where there's only a couple of points between each tier, there's some big gaps between those top echelon in this game than the rest, and it might be worth waiting that extra week to make sure you've got that cash, got the extra trade to get that big one in. My bad trade was obviously Jack Steele. He wasn't great, but the really worst one was was the last round of the buyers. I had 18 green dots, including Ryan Marrick, who might have scored was it double figures in the end? Might have been 11 or a 12. I think it might have been single figures. I had a trade. I thought, well, I don't want to cop that. I'm coming home pretty strong. I'm going to get a good score. So I traded out Connor Rosie, who had his bye, for and Noah Anderson, who played that last game, just to get Marek's score off, and got me an extra 100 or so points that week, which boosted me from, I think I was coming 600th to 300th, but had to trade Rosie back in. So that cost me essentially 2 trades. And if I had 2 trades at the back end of the year when I was copying donuts for 3 weeks, I think I would have made a lot more than that simple 100 points back. So that was a bit of I got a bit greedy there and a bit aggressive on the trades. But having said that, hindsight, we talk about learnings, I think the value of DPP and covering each position was more important this year than ever with these short-term injuries and lack of trades and suspension. So if I had have gone someone like a Jack Sinclair even and had the cover there rather than the Noah Anderson, and I would have been able to do a bit of movement to keep that go, because I felt like this year that 23rd premium became more popular this year than ever. And while initially I was also against it because there's some costs which come with that best 23rd premium. It might mean that you have to take a haircut on your 22nd premium. You might not have the best 22. You might have to make a decision and take a 105 and then leave a 120 on the table. You're better off keeping that trade for when, if you get an injured player like a Clayton Oliver, you're better off using that trade just to trade him out rather than playing a 23rd man. So there's lots of arguments against the 23rd man, but I found this year, well, I would have been wearing a lot more donuts in the back end of the year if I didn't have though I think I had 24 premiums by the end. So even a Darcy Cameron I had on the bench the last couple of weeks, which obviously helped my scoring as well. So again, next year we try to plan our trades of, what is it, 36 trades, and however might be forced trades, however you might need to start with 12 keepers to get yourself a completed side to have enough forced trades. I think we might even have to build in with your trade planning a trade to be able to get in a 23rd premium. Your biggest takeaway for the season or learning, which you didn't really realise the importance of for the last 5 years?
I think, like, in terms of the learning for me, like, there's certainly the 23rd man is something that I'm probably coming around to a little bit more. I think for me, I had a crack at getting one with Fife, which I think is also something that I've probably reflected on a bit, that I think when you're getting that 23rd premium, and it's certainly something that I'll want to get next year, but I don't think I'll want it. Like, I won't do it if it's going to hamstring my ability to hold a trade. I think when you're getting that 23rd primo, and you did it, you got someone that was able to put up really good scores, whether it's in the defensive line, getting Ridley underpriced, or sort of forward, having Cameron as that sort of worst swing. I think that's the way that it has to be played. You've got to get someone that's going to be, I suppose, capable of being a top wider and an easy plug-in, plug-out. You don't want to be sort of looping. I think Mills, people jumped on Mills, which certainly could have paid off, and I think it was the right move at the time. But my concern would be, one, it probably takes two trades to get to him. You've got to trade out a rookie to generate the cash to get up. So that's two trades to get that 23rd man. And I think if you've got the trades to do it, 100%, you get it every time because it's such an advantage. But I think part of that is also making sure that you're going to have enough to finish your side. So I think it's a real balancing act, and it's a good one to sort of think about, and it's very team dependent in terms of the strategy. But looking at my side, if I didn't make those sort of six glaring errors in my starting side and was able to hold those trades, which in the 2 years that I came top 10, I think I made one trade in 1 year and none in the other year in terms of those first couple rounds, just because I nailed the starting side. So if you've got those trades there, you've got the ability to do that. I think in terms of making sure that, like, going for the 23rd man at all costs, I think can hamstring you a little bit too much if you're getting someone like a Fife who's going to hurt you in the long run, not be able to put up the scores consistently and cause too much headaches. I think you're better off having those on the run home.
Yeah, imagine having trades in the run home this year. It's obviously a pipe dream for me this year, but be able to have the ability to trade out a Tim Taranto, a Darcy Cameron, a Jack Steele, whoever's your underperformer, and jumping on that flyer where it was a Flanders or a Butters or someone in defence, a Ryan, a Houston. Like, there was the ability there to really put on 70, 80 points with one trade per week on the opposition. So certainly the value of trades, and that's what I've said it before, I really like this game of Supercoach where that other strategy element of trade comes into account. So constantly learning, obviously do some work in the pre-season and come out with more stuff for next year once it all settles in. But just a quick one on next year, early two or three players who you've got your eye firmly on?
I went through, Emperor on Twitter has gone through and done his projections for how much players are going to cost next year, which is really helpful. So I sort of went through a few of the lists, and there's a fair few that sort of jump out. I think underperforming or underpriced potential primos. I think even though we talked about Took Miller potentially not being one of those guys that could be the absolute elite, he's going to be priced at 97 next year. Dimmer Hardwick, we know he doesn't tag, which has obviously impacted Took's score on the run home. So if he gets freed up, I think he could be really like a really good starting pick under price. He could have, you know, around 13, 15 points. So you can easily improve on that. Matt Kennedy as well from the Blues. I think we're going to be a bit skint in defence. He's priced at 75. We've seen what he did on the run home. So 407k for someone that could easily be a top two or three defender. If the role holds, I think is a really good pick. And then I think also Himmelberg priced at 80, seeing what he's potentially capable of, is certainly someone you could look at as a bit of a stop gap, because I think he's probably underpriced by about 20. But I think there's a lot of options, especially in the forward and defensive line of players that are going to be slightly underpriced. Nothing massive, but I think that's probably going to allow us to spend up and grab some of those Ubers in the other lines. A bit more of a guns and rook approach with some underpriced primos rather than mid prices.
Yeah, and that's, I think history shows they're the ones who stack up, the underpriced primos who potentially a hopper could have been before he got the injury this year, early season, rather than just the mid-pricer who becomes, when everyone's getting those upgrades mid-season, they become a bit of a burden when you got too many. But that's it from us. Obviously, send it all with the email, but I really appreciate everyone's support. Great to see those results coming through. Feel free to flick us an email with your result, what you ended up. It'd be great to see and follow your progress. Tommy, again, you smashed your team this year and smashed the pods. Really appreciate your help and very fortunate I can pick your brain most weeks. No coincidence, my rank the last 2 years have been pretty handy, speaking to you the last couple of years, and hopefully we'll chat to you come pre-season next year.
Yeah, thanks guys. Thanks everyone, and cheers, Al.
Beautiful. Bye.